looking forward. Okay, welcome everybody. My name is Laura Tan, and you are watching Your Money and Your Mindset, where each week we look at why some people become very successful at what they do, and some people don't, even though they have the same, the same opportunities. But before that, I want to welcome the people from Stickum, Blog TV, Real Coaching Radio TV Network, Receiver Internet Radio, Radio Roku, Shoutcast. Hi, for those people who've got smartphones, and New Media Radio as our syndication channels. We are live to go. And today, I've got a treat for you people out there in TV land. And my guest here is, as you can see, Mr. Wayne McDonald. Give a wave, Wayne.
Hello.
He's the founder and CEO of a company called Success Know-How. That sort of says it all, doesn't it? Now, he is a recognized expert in professional development training with over 25 years of experience either owning or running corporate training companies. So for all you people out there who've got the idea you want corporate training, this is it. This gentleman here is dedicated to, what can I say, developing impactful and life-changing partnerships between you and your people and your workers or within your organization called Your Family. You can call it that too. Just consider yourself the CEO and the boss of it. Now, the thing with Wayne is different is that he's not afraid to confront the hard issues that prevent people from and companies from reaching their peak, performing at their best. So he helps his clients take that quantum leap that most people are afraid of taking to where they want to go from their present circumstances, which is fairly limited, as we talked about just before the show. So welcome, Mr. Wayne McDonald. How are you going?
Yeah, good, thank you. And thanks for that great introduction.
Hey, that's good. So my review is all sitting on the edge of the seat. And so now we know what Mr. Wayne McDonald does. Can you tell us a bit more about who he is?
A bit about me?
Yeah.
Well, it's 26 years this year. I've been in the coaching and training business. I've been doing coaching for years before it was called coaching. We just called it one-to-one sessions way back then. And originally I started off in the counselling field. So, in fact, all of my working life has been dealing with people's mindsets and people's heads in one way or another. Because even in my business coaching or my sales training, at least half or up to 80% of both of those is helping people shift their mindset. So it's always been a personal and a professional interest and passion. I remember as a kid, I'd watch people and try and work out what they were doing and why they were doing it. So it's always been just part of what I do, who I am.
So from a very young age, you've observed people. And in a sense, did you find out that in your observations, there were behaviors that led people to become successful or behaviors that basically caused them to shoot themselves in the foot?
Yes, absolutely. The way people think leads to the way they feel, which leads to the way they behave, which obviously gets results. A lot of people fall into the mistake if they're not getting a result that they want personally or professionally, what they do is just change the result. And without thinking about the emotional component that led to that behavior, without thinking about the mindset or the thinking patterns that led to the emotion that led to that behavior. So what they do, I mean, how many have you or your viewers, how many people have had a friend who's gone from one unsuccessful job complaining about whatever to going, I'm never going to get myself in that situation again. And in 6 months' time, there they are, different people, same complaints. Well, the other one, of course, is a relationship. People go have a bad experience in a relationship, so they get involved with somebody who's tall and thin this time instead of short and whatever.
Yes.
But the same issue arises because they haven't dealt with what they need to deal with.
Okay, that's very interesting. It's actually very, what's the word? Honest?
Well, I mean, one of the things I teach people about is something I call context and strategies. And to explain this, first of all, thinking about a fishbowl, okay, and a fish in a fishbowl. The way the fish gets around the little castle in there and the weeds or whatever, the way the fish manoeuvres around the fishbowl is the strategies it uses. The context of its life is the fishbowl. That's what holds it together. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So what most people do is just, on an ongoing basis, just try and find new strategies. And that can let off some pressure and, you know, develop some excitement or whatever because we're doing something new. We're going around that weed the other way. But sometimes we need to change the bowl. We need to expand the context. We need to change context and have what I call a context shift. Another example, we're sitting at a desk right now and there's all sorts of stuff on the desk. And if you think of the laptop and the book and the CD set as different aspects of your life, so there's your job, there's your partner, there's your house, whatever. If people aren't happy these days, they just grab that thing, change job, go and change relationship, you know, change car. And that creates a certain level of momentary or temporary satisfaction or happiness. Okay. But really, sometimes we need a new desk. And you're not going to get away from the fact that this desk is the Titanic. It doesn't matter how the music's playing, you know, it's not working.
Yeah. Wow, so that is where in the introduction, you know, I said that you are not afraid to take your clients, especially people who run companies that are not doing too well, because basically they're doing the same things over and over again.
That's correct.
Yeah, and you're taking them to a place where they may have to confront their own attitudes and behavior, correct?
Mm. Exactly. Even in the contract I get my business coaching clients to sign, I have a paragraph which says emotional, which is titled Emotional Anguish. So I point out right from the get-go that sometimes my job, it's not always, but more than half the time, to make significant changes in their personal, professional, business life and get different results requires change, fairly obviously. So, but facilitate change sometimes involves confronting personal stuff, issues, challenges or whatever.
Demons.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes, again, not always, but sometimes that can, you know, bring up certain issues from the past or sadnesses or, you know, some anguish of some description, some upset of some description. Mm. So my aim is not to do that, but to say it's not going to happen is just not real. Again, it doesn't happen all the time, but I point it out right at the beginning because sometimes if I'm doing a good job, that has to happen.
Wow. And that's the part where you have to be, for better, you know, words or word to use, is you have to confront them, but in a compassionate manner.
Well, people sometimes think confronting, that word confronting is a very confronting word. That's right. But confronting means really just turning around and facing what needs to be faced. And it doesn't have to be an ugly or horrible or whatever thing. It just means being honest about whatever it is. I mean, another analogy I use is that sometimes we walk through life with dirt smudged on our face, but mm-hmm. the dirt's been there for, you know, 10, 20, 30, 60 years, depending on how old you are and when this all started. And you don't even see the dirt anymore. Now, occasionally other people see the dirt, but in the social conspiracy we live in, nobody says anything because they don't want to upset you or it's not their role or job to point things out. And they might go to their friend and say, oh, well, have you seen George? You've seen that mud on his face? But they wouldn't go to George directly. So part of my job is to sometimes hold a mirror up and go, well, look, as far as I can see, this is the mud on your face. And then you've got choice. And you can say, well, stuffy, I like my mud. Or you can rub half of it off or go and have a good, you know, spa treatment and get it all off. Yeah. But unless you know about it, what we're talking about is consciousness. So consciousness is about, a good analogy for that is the lights in the room, so with the dimmer switch. So if you put the dimmer switch, well, if you switch the light off, we're in the dark about a certain thing.
Yep.
But around some things, we've got a little bit of light on. And I'm sure all of us have had times when we start to understand something about why we do something that we we just did compulsively or an automatic pilot before, but now we start to understand, oh, that's why I do it. But we still can't control it. We just understand that's what we're doing and maybe why we're doing it. The next step is to actually start to manage that. Mm. And after doing that for quite a while, you might actually reach a stage of mastery around it where it's just sometimes happens, but it doesn't really have a big impact on you.
Wow, that's a lot to take in, folks. So those people on Stick and Blog TV, Real Coaching Radio TV Network, Receiver Internet Radio, Radio Roku, Sharpcast, you know this is interactive, you know this is live, and you know this gentleman here knows what he's talking about. So if you want to send in questions into the chat room, please do. The number is there if you want to ring in. There's the Skype address as well. Because this is actually a very important aspect. You're talking about the elephant in the room that, like you say, it's a social conspiracy. People are trying to be too polite. Mm. But by the same token, they're not helping their friend George by not at least mentioning that, George, hey, you've got mud on your face.
And you have to be a bit aware. I mean, the social conspiracy, the way that I phrase that is, I won't let you know that I know what's going on for you if you don't let me know that you know what's going on for me.
Ah,
you get that?
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I won't tell you that I can see what you're doing and, you know, that's not good for
that's
you.
That's not helpful, yeah.
Because if I tell you, you might tell me about some of my ugly demons. So this is at the more personal level of what I do. It's certainly not everything that I do. But unless a business owner or a salesperson, because my business really is 50% business coaching, 50% sales training, and then, I know that's 100%, but a few percent more of miscellaneous, including some career coaching and the personal life coaching. Half of business coaching, to be honest, could be categorized as life coaching.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, I was going to say that. You bring yourself to your business. You can't just drop it at the door and become this amazing business person, because that just doesn't work.
That's right. Yeah.
So you bring in your I guess your paradigms, your prejudices, your opinions.
Well, your past history, good, bad, and ugly about all that. And, you know, if you've got authority or control issues based on your own childhood, for instance, we're getting into a bit of psychobabble now, but you're likely to play that out with your staff or people at work. I mean, it's a... That's just what happens. To think it doesn't happen is, naive, I guess, would be the description.
So tell me, in your experience with these sorts of people, do you find that sometimes, even when you point out to them the mud on their face, they will totally reject it because their sense of self is so fragile that they can't cope with the idea that this is as a consequence of their actions, unconsciously, that they're causing problems within their organisation, even though they asked you to come in the first place to help straighten things out, as they say?
Look, sometimes it's hard work. I've got a client right now who has a staff of 5 or 6 and needs to confront 2 of these staff members about their behaviour and their lack of attendance and various other things. And we keep talking about it, and we keep talking about it. And for the last, I don't know, 3 months we've been talking about it. And then there's always excuses. But we always find reasons and excuses for the stuff that we find challenging to confront. And what my client needs to confront is maybe they won't like her if she's a bit tough. But in business, well, in life sometimes, you know, that concept of tough love. And, you know, when I was in the counselling field, we used to teach big personal development workshops. When we talked about relationships, one of the things that we used to talk about was that we teach people how to treat us. So the longer you don't actually say to someone, please don't talk to me like that, when you talk to me like that, I don't feel very good, and what I'd like is for us to find a different way of communicating or something like that.
Yeah.
The longer that behaviour goes on, you let it go on, the harder it is to confront, and the more permission you give to the other person to behave in that way. And not only behaving that way, but behaving that way plus 5%. Because I got away with it last time, so I'll do it a little bit more. That makes sense?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's
excuse me. That's
very interesting. So basically you're saying as a result of what we do or what we don't do, we signal to the other party how to treat us.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, if we're talking about just sort of fairly basic assertion type stuff, if you don't speak up and say what's on your mind, and the other person's a bit more controlling or forthright or a bit domineering or something like that, then because you don't speak up, they just take over a bit more. And because they've taken over a bit more, you're likely to retreat a bit more. And because you're doing that a bit more, they'll take over a bit more.
Yeah.
It becomes a, we call it a mutually interlocking racket. So it's a, takes two to tangle. So, you know, there's two elements to it. So I talk about this sort of stuff when I do a team building, training with people. That's another thing that I do in the extra few percent I mentioned.
So that's very interesting. And in a sense too, when you're talking about giving people permission, it doesn't matter even though your title is CEO, but if you don't assert your authority.
I've been into more than one business where the CEO and or the business owner, sometimes
same thing, yeah.
They're not running the company, really, in terms of the dynamics of the company, and which is something that I, you know, if that's happening, I need to
fix.
Basically. Or help the business owner fix.
Right, and you find that it is somebody who is behind the scenes who's actually, in a sense, dictating how the business runs.
Yes, sometimes overtly and sometimes in more subtle, covert ways, through manipulation or something like that.
Wow, so they're basically, in a sense, knowing that the CEO boss has got vulnerabilities and they use that against them?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's one example. I mean, it can be a lot of different type of things. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is definitely food for thought, people. If you run businesses or you're in a position to observe that happening in your business, if you do and you've got any sort of experiences like you'd like to talk about, please do. So people from Stickham, hi, you're there. Blog TV, Real Coaching Radio, TV Network, Receiver Internet Radio, Radio Riku, Shoutcast for those people who are listening and watching this on your smartphone. Fantastic, I'm glad you are. New Media Radio and TV as our syndication channels. We've got a bit carried away because that's an interesting point.
Can I just say one last thing on that? In terms of business coaching and in terms of building a business, if you don't get the people aspect right, it's not going to work. Doesn't matter if you've got a great product or, you know, it's like having a punnet of strawberries and you've got one or two rotten strawberries. It actually wrecks the whole thing. And that's what people can do in a team or in an organisation.
Okay, take that on board. That's the strawberry example. I think it's very relevant. And I totally agree with you in the sense that it just takes one person who's got negativity or a dynamic that doesn't suit that organisation to cause other people to not perform.
Becomes toxic.
Yeah, literally becomes toxic, even though you can't see it. Now, the analogy I would say is, would you let somebody in who has tuberculosis into your company and just cough over everybody else? You won't, would you?
Well, unlikely.
So is it similar? So it's just that the toxicity you cannot see.
It's a lot harder to pick up, even through a thorough interview process, personality profiling, all sorts of things. Sometimes these people can slip through.
Is that right?
Mm.
Wow.
But the whole hiring process needs to be quite rigorous, and not just because he's a mate of your brother's or something.
Okay, there's a bit of that happening. Now I want to go to the next question, which is on your website and your business. Your tagline is, success can be achieved by growing your mind and engaging your heart. So I'm going to ask you, what do you mean by engaging your heart? Because for most CEOs in big companies, and they're usually blokes, men, and executives, would they be receptive to that line, engaging your heart, because it can feel a bit, you know, feminine, touchy-feely kind of thing?
Soft.
Well,
going back to what I said just a couple of minutes ago, unless you get the people on board, the whole thing's not going to work. And just right now, if I lean over here somewhere, well, I don't know where it is. The latest Harvard Business Review, the cover of the latest Harvard Business Review, is about how important happiness is in the workplace and for profitability. And there's about a 15-page article on it. So happiness and people engagement, being engaged in their work. Staff engagement's almost like a buzzword in corporate world in Australia right now. And about 18 months ago, again in the Harvard Business Review, a study was published of 90,000 people through a number of countries. I can't remember, but it was across many countries.
Mm.
And they found 21% of people, only 21%, were fully engaged with their work. You understand? So that's a heart thing, that they're enthusiastic, they want to be there, that they're passionate yeah. about that. But even more alarmingly, this study found that 40% were actively disengaged. Now, when I talk about this in a presentation, and I've got 100 people in the room sort of thing, I usually then say, how many of you have worked in a company at some stage where about 4 in 10 people don't want to be there? And everybody puts their hand up because everybody's had that sort of experience. And that this is what that means. And getting your people engaged is about finding things to engage their heart. You know, a formula for success, I was pointing out to you before,
mm-hmm.
on the whiteboard behind me, there's usually people talk about IQ as being important, and no doubt it is.
Mm-hmm.
Most people consider IQ to be quite fixed, even though I have read some more recent research saying maybe that's not quite true.
Yeah.
Then there's EQ, which a lot of people know about thanks to the work of Daniel Coleman 20 years ago or whatever it was, which is emotional intelligence, and that's an incredibly vital aspect of sales and business success.
Yep.
But I've come up with another two, which you may not have heard about since I only just made them up last year. But that's PQ and RQ. And that's your passion quotient. In other words, how passionate are you about what you do? Which some people would argue is part of EQ, but it's so important that, I think it's a standalone thing. And RQ is your risk quotient. So in other words, how willing are you to take a risk? Because you're unlikely to find, if you study successful people, be it in sport, business, adventurers, whatever, they have taken some sort of risk to leave the known, to venture off into the unknown ocean, metaphorically, to the promised land, sort of thing. And you've probably lived in places where you weren't born,
mm-hmm.
and I have as well. I've lived in 4 cities in 2 countries. Every time I've left, people had a different reaction. Some people thought I was crazy for leaving. Why would you leave this place? It's so wonderful. Some people thought, it's nice here, but I can see why you're going, and I don't want to go, but good on you. Some people thought, what a great idea, I'll come with you. And that's the sort of thing when you make some changes and want to do something a little bit innovative, you'll have those different sorts of reactions, just like you're going to live in somewhere else. Some people will think you're crazy. Some people think it's all right for you, but don't tell me about it. And some people think, where do I sign up? How do I get on the boat?
Fantastic. Literally, yeah. On the board, I'm glad you said that, because I was going to segue into this thing, especially for the American viewers. Christopher Columbus, that's the case in point, when he sailed, they were still under the impression then, at that time, that the Earth was flat.
Yeah,
and right. He was going to fall over the edge.
Many people thought he was crazy.
Yeah, many people thought he was crazy. Mm. He had to believe in himself, raise the funds by going to the King and Queen of Spain, Isabella, and basically he put his life and the life of his crew up there, at stake, saying that I believe we're not going to fall off the edge. It's actually a globe, and we're going to get to the Americas.
Mm.
And
because, the rest is history.
And the rest is history, and because he did that and took a big risk, a gamble, he became wildly successful, the spice trade, and he just opened up all the trade routes around the world.
Mm.
So that's the sort of, that's mega scale risk, but you're also talking about people who have difficulty
One could say it's the illusion of risk, because there was no risk for Columbus, really.
In retrospect.
It was in everybody's head that there was a risk. It wasn't a real risk.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean?
Yes. So coming back to the tagline of, engaging your heart, so how do you go into your businesses to talk to clients, rather about their business, and saying, look, so you have to engage your heart or the heart of
your... Well, I doubt if I'd just say it like that.
Sure, I mean, but you mean that, yeah?
Yeah.
You mean that, but so how do you actually approach your clients and say, look, things aren't working well in your organization because 40% of your workforce wish they were somewhere else?
Well, I think a lot of that comes down to communication systems and just basic communication in a in the relationships in a workplace. Making sure that you're listening to people, making sure that you're actually, because sometimes a business owner is doing things that they think are in subtle ways rewarding their staff, but their staff don't even notice because it's not their paradigm. It's not what they want. Like, people sometimes think another pay rise is obviously a reward for doing whatever, well done, yeah. But an extra week's holiday might be a better currency for a certain person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's about communication and finding out what the currencies are. See, we all work for three currencies, and they are time, energy, money. And if you think about it, at different times, sometimes in life, one of these is more important. But I've had people roll up to my office in their M3 convertible BMWs or, you know, fancy Mercedes or whatever. And so they've got the money side. They're exhausted because they're working 70, 80 hours a week, and they've got no time, you know, and that balance isn't right for them. But there's no good having all the time in the world and no money as well.
Yep.
So you've got to have the right mix. And in terms of having a staff who are really engaged, I think that's a really important thing, to find out what the currency exchange is that they're after. Everyone needs a certain amount of money, but also for different times in life, like if you've got school-age kids, you've got to have the money coming in, but you've also got to have the time, well, I believe you do, as a parent, to put into your kids, you know, because there's a lot of holidays and different things that they do, obviously.
Mm, because you actually end up with people who are highly successful coming to you in their 40s and 50s and say, I don't know my children anymore.
That's exactly right, yes. Yeah. Yeah, quite a bit of that.
Yeah, and so...
Actually, a little bit less than what it used to be honest. There's something I've just noticed.
Yeah, but usually these are men, right? In traditional roles, they are the guys who go out and, you know, make money. Sorry, ladies, I'm not being sort of sexist here, but they have that role, and now even women are going out and forging their own careers, which means, to me, I see also a lot of guilt involved in, I should be at home with the kids because they're growing up. They know their nanny better, or their nanny knows them better than, you know, I know what my favourite, kids' favourite ice cream flavour is.
That's right. That sometimes happens. But, you know, I've certainly had my mix of male and female
clients,
business owners in that sort of situation. So, yeah.
Really. So, okay. Now, I'm going to turn the spotlight onto you now, because you've been in this industry for a long time, and you don't stay in it because it's not just for the money. And it sounds like you're very interested in helping people evolve and become better versions of themselves through business. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that really drives you beyond that?
Well, probably 15, 17 years ago, something like that, I did a workshop. I've actually spent a lot of time, energy and money on my own personal development.
Mm-hmm.
Anything from counselling to a lot of personal development workshops. I've read 3,000 books. I've travelled to America. I did, in 1991, I went to America to do trainings with Tony Robbins. And in 1992, he came to Australia. I didn't know that was going to happen. So I've spent over $220,000 of my own money on my own personal development. So I'm a great believer in the importance of that. And somewhere along the way, I developed a life mission statement, which simply says, the purpose of my life is to encourage myself and others to live an extraordinary life. And that's a big driver for me, that whatever that means for the individual. And sometimes I have to help them get clear on what an extraordinary life means. Now, if they're a business